33-year-old male found dead a few days ago. Someone amongst them is our killer.
Imagine a family without a care in the world, but on the brink of disaster. It's 1988, and the Harrells from Caerphilly, South Wales, have every reason to be happy. Their daughter and their younger son have a new sister, Natalie.
We were all very surprised and we were all very excited at the fact that there was a new little baby in the house. It was even better for me because he was a little sister.
The age differences was 9 and 4, so it was just right to have another baby. And everything was perfect.
But everything wasn't perfect. 200 miles away at Newton Le Willows in Lancashire lives someone who, for entirely separate reasons, coveted a baby. She was a woman who displayed bizarre behaviour involving babies over several years. And she was about to encounter Natalie.
There are people out there in society who have no empathy for their fellow human beings. And they will do anything if it pleases them. And that, to me, is a very frightening thought.
It's April 1988, and baby Natalie Harrell is 4 months old and doing well.
Very placid, very easygoing. She's getting quite a character. She's pretty good at sleeping and settling down. She was quite a good baby.
I wanted to be basically a mother role to Natalie. I used to generally just take care of her. I used to play with her toys and, you know, try and encourage her to talk. Generally everything, you know, a doting sister would do, basically.
The Harrells were planning a holiday, but their happiness was about to be wrecked. In Preston, Lancashire, a woman who liked to call herself Adelia, though it wasn't her real name, hired a car to drive to Wales. She was planning a crime which would shatter the lives of the family.
Adelia's case is one of those examples of someone with a kind of history of pathological behaviour somehow interacting with a family who were least expecting it.
Over the following days, she used Barclays cash dispensers in Cardiff and Pontypridd 6 times. But for the man who led the subsequent police operation, she left few other clues to her movements.
We know that she stayed in the city centre for a few days, and I think that she probably used that time to prowl the city centre, getting to know the lie of the land. Where she slept, where she stayed, we don't know. Possibly she slept rough in her car.
What is known is that some days after arriving in Cardiff, there was an incident which foreshadowed the events which were later to unfold. Adelia approached a shopper.
What a lovely baby. She's lovely. Can I hold her?
No, Sarah. No.
The Harrells, including baby Natalie, arrived in Cardiff to shop for their holiday.
I can remember just starting, getting off the train and more or less skipping up this long tunnel here. I can remember it being so long and, you know, the anticipation to, you know, to, and the excitement to go shopping was, you know, something that we didn't generally do in Cardiff.
No, but I just loved shopping and...
yeah. Natalie was in the pram and she really enjoyed days like this. She tended to be the type of child that would just wanted to be in the outdoors, and she loved being in a pram. She loved being with us, didn't she?
Not far away, at around this time, Adelia entered a food outlet and asked for hot water for a baby flask. She was wearing a bin liner on her head, cut into the shape of a scarf.
Right, just a few more.
the Harrells were working their way round the shops, including a Littlewood store, now taken over by Next. At some point in the afternoon, Adelia began following them. Eventually, they headed back to Queen Street Station.
We just finished shopping, came through the doors here, and suddenly from behind I was approached by a woman. "Excuse me, madam, excuse me." She said, "Have you just been shopping in Littlewoods?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Well, I've been sent to get you because you're owed some change."
"I'm the store detective there.
You don't really
The manager's just sent me to tell you that you've left some change.
Well, I looked at her at this point and I thought, who is this strange and peculiar woman? I can remember looking up at her and thinking, oh, something doesn't seem right, I don't know. She was quite scruffy in the way she looked, wasn't she?
And I said to her then, I need to sort this out, I will come back with you, but I don't think there is a problem. But then I went back to the store with her.
Which I wasn't very happy with because of the fact that I wanted, I had to go back into Cardiff.
Just wanted to get home
and open, the clothes that we bought that day, basically.
"Oh, you're beautiful, aren't you? That's a beautiful baby."
I really thought in the back of my mind, does she think I'm a shoplifter or something like that? Why is she questioning me? Because I even showed her my receipt and I knew that I wasn't owed anything. But in the back of my mind, I wanted to make sure that I was not accused of anything.
What happened next was cleverly planned.
What you've got to imagine is we were at the bottom. It all happened at the bottom of an escalator, very similar to the one that we're standing on here. Obviously not the same one as the store because the store no longer exists. So we were standing here at the bottom
and the woman said to me, "You go upstairs and sort out the problem because that's where the problem is upstairs."
Obviously you can't take the pushchair on the escalators, but it's just up here to the right. They'll be expecting you to go and get your change.
"Leave her with me, it's fine." So I got on the escalator with Kevin, left Natalie in the pushchair with Louise holding the pushchair with the woman.
So when obviously I was looking up the escalator at my mum, and the woman said to me, as soon as my mum was out of sight, your mum's calling you. So I said, I didn't hear anything, so I hesitated.
"Oh, I just heard your mum calling you. Will you be a good girl, go see what she wants?"
"What's up,
Sleedor?" "No, it'll be fine, don't worry. I'll look after her. Good girl. You go find your mum. That's a good girl."
I thought, oh no, what's going on? Because the way she pushed Natalie away just wasn't right. So I went up the rest of the escalator, come back down, and you've got to imagine there was a stairs here. So I come all the way down the stairs, running frantically through the store, and she was nowhere to be found. As you can imagine, being a small child, all the clothes and the store, everything was just so much bigger, and the clothes was so much higher. It was like a maze, and I couldn't find my way out.
An eyewitness saw Adelia fleeing, almost overturning the pushchair on some steps.
I think she'd calculated her entrance, where she wanted to position us by the escalator, and her exit, which we later found out, was at the back entrance of the store.
Meticulous planning is a core aspect of infant abduction. You have to think of a scenario, you have to think of the situation in which you're going to do it, you have to think about how you're going to present yourself and what you're going to say. Now, Adelia, of course, pretended to be a store detective. She had worked as a store detective, so she would know something about the rules and the content of how you approach people.
Whilst Adelia escaped into the city centre, Maggie and Louise were held at the store for questioning by managers till police arrived.
You just wanted to get out of that room and you're thinking, why are they keeping me in here? Why don't you just help me search? Why don't you believe me? Very, very frustrating.
Adelia was just 300 yards away 5 minutes after the abduction, she was seen by an eyewitness in the toilets of a multi-story car park.
Sorry, just one second.
When she went through the door of the toilet, there was a pushchair blocking her way. She then saw a woman bending down in one of the cubicles over the toilet, and she thought it very unusual. And she thought at the time that the woman was doing something with her hair. She'd removed the headscarf and apparently put a wig on, which made her look about 10 years younger.
Maggie was meanwhile being taken to the police station for several more hours questioning.
Why weren't they looking? You've got to look. You're missing valuable time. You've got to start looking. If they'd searched straight away and cordoned off, say, an area, then they might have found her straight away.
I know that it upsets families, but unfortunately, that is the way it must be done. It's essential that we get our facts straight, and therefore it was very important that we verified Maggie's movements from the time that she left her home in Caerphilly until the time she went into Cardiff, went round shopping and did the things that she had to do.
The eyewitness who'd seen Adelia in the toilets returned a few hours later.
The toilets were empty and the pushchair was still in the toilet. She reported this to a car parking attendant, who was then able to tell her there'd been a baby snatch in the city, and that is how we recovered the pushchair.
It was only through finding the pushchair that they started to believe my story. I thought, my God, where has she gone? It was just utter despair. You just can't describe it. It was just like a proper nightmare.
Police had a few eyewitness descriptions, but after finding the pushchair, the trail went cold. No one could know where Adelia would take Natalie or what she'd do with her. Nor that the truth which brought this woman to Cardiff was every bit as extraordinary as the events that unfolded there, even to those closest to her.
I was about to discover the truth about the woman that I'd married.
The encounter between the Harrells and the woman who was to abduct four-month-old Natalie in 1988 took only a few minutes, but it had its roots in a pattern of bizarre behaviour stretching back years. In the mid-80s, Adelia was single, in her 40s, and had a twin obsession of getting pregnant and getting a man.
In terms of the profile of people who do infant abductions, there are quite a few cases of women in their 40s engaged in this kind of behaviour. And some people have tried to link it to the menopause and the fact that they're getting to the end of their own childbearing age. What's most important is satisfying your own psychological needs. And those psychological needs are of two different types. One need is the kind of internal need, and it's normally thought of as a kind of compensation for loss. You've lost a child with a stillbirth or a miscarriage, or you can't have children any longer, or it's about maintaining or trying to maintain a relationship with a partner.
Adelia had become the partner of someone who knew a great deal less about her than he thought. When they'd met, he'd been single, nearly 50, and they'd had unprotected sex on their first night. He agreed to be interviewed for this film, provided his words were performed by an actor.
I first met Adelia at a dance in Chester. She ended up coming back spending the weekend. At the end of it, I said I thought we weren't really compatible. So she just screamed off in a sports car. I'm Catholic, so I didn't use protection. About 3 weeks later, I received a call from Adelia saying that she wanted to meet up with me.
What's all this about?
She didn't say anything. She just handed me a letter. She said she was pregnant.
Okay, look, I don't want you to worry. I'll look after you. I'll look after the baby. All right. I mean it. I'm not that type of a fellow. I'll just walk away.
For a time, the relationship felt normal and relaxed. The couple spent weekends together at his house. But then came a phone call.
Delia. What? You've lost our babies. Babies? I mean, what she was saying was that she'd lost twins. I didn't even know she was expecting twins. It's just devastating.
Hi, darling. Sorry I'm late. They kept me back at work.
2 months later, Adelia announced she was pregnant again.
I was getting a bit of leg pulling at work, you know, these pregnancies coming so soon, one after the other.
You're going to have to start buying stuff soon.
But a short time later, she again said she'd miscarried.
I suspect she was inventing these pregnancies to get me to marry her. But we're already living together as man and wife. I mean, I was giving her money for food, clothes, you know. And then I discovered that she'd changed the name, my deed poll, to mine, without even asking me.
Adelia's attempts to deepen the relationship were to become increasingly bizarre.
The behaviours are all to do with manipulation, deceit, a kind of protracted pathological lying, a kind of manipulation of other human beings, and a lack of empathy. So this is someone who is very much bound up with herself, puts herself first, and cares first and foremost, about her own psychological needs.
Those needs led her to make a request, which later was to suggest her mind was deeply disturbed.
She asked me for something strange, a Lincoln Continental. And I bought it.
Adelia, for the third time, declared she was pregnant. She developed a swollen stomach, but there was no other evidence a baby was present.
You know, it'd be nice to sort of feel it, you know, kicking around in there.
Adelia's pressure to force her partner into marriage became increasingly explicit.
That man was right.
What man?
The man from the Samaritans.
You didn't go into the Samaritans.
He said if you were a decent man, you'd make a decent woman out of me.
Oh, he did he?
Yeah.
I thought, she's already taken my name, she's carrying me child, so I thought, I'll book the marriage ceremony. And we went ahead. And all through the ceremony, for no reason that I could see, she was laughing hysterically. I was just so happy about the child. Adelia said that Tess had confirmed it was going to be a girl. So we decided to call her Heidi. I was just so excited. So I went buying cots and prams and so on, you know. We even looked for combs and cups and trinkets with Heidi printed on them.
But 3 days after the wedding, Adelia telephoned her new husband.
I've killed my baby.
She said she'd fallen down some concrete steps and there was no fetal heartbeat, so she was going to have the dead baby removed.
Adelia!
When I got home, the house was empty. There was no message, no phone call, nothing whatsoever to explain where she was. I was desperate. I ended up phoning the police to report her missing.
It seemed she'd left him.
She did finally come home and I rang the police to tell them. They came to interview her and eventually she admitted she'd never been pregnant. And only said that she was to keep me. I was so upset and hurt by the charade that she'd put me through. It was at that point that I realised she was mentally ill. So I decided to do a bit of research.
He discovered Adelia had been married 3 times before. The first husband, a merchant seaman, left her, though they had 2 children. The second appeared to have divorced her before dying, partly through alcohol abuse. But then came a revelation relating to the third husband, which cast new light on Adelia's request for a Lincoln Continental.
She told me that he died of an heart attack.
In fact, the husband was found in a Lincoln Continental with a pipe attached to the exhaust. He'd committed suicide.
Before you know it, she's on to the police saying, I want the car back. Well, the police are saying, you know, it's full of vomit and fumes, but she's there demanding. So she gets it back, and before you know it, she's driving around again in it.
What you have to try and work out is what a Lincoln Continental symbolises for her. Well, at one level, it symbolises wealth and so on, and the fact that she gets someone to buy it for her inflates her self-esteem because, you know, she's powerful enough to get men to buy this car for her. But why on earth wouldn't she be put off it if her husband had committed suicide in it? Well, perhaps the reason is that if someone's committed suicide, perhaps, again, it reflects on her own concept of identity. Perhaps she is that powerful that people will do all sorts of things out there for her.
Her husband's patience had run out and he left her. He did return after 3 weeks, but tensions deepened. Adelia was letting the house slip. At about this time, she did try to get work. She obtained a government grant to set up a private detective agency and offered her services as a store detective, but she put decreasing effort into her marriage.
Our relationship deteriorated. Then things really came to a head.
Shirley, please, you've got to call me. He's attacking me.
He's attacking me. He's hurting me. Please, Shirley, come. Shirley, you've got to come now. Please call me.
I couldn't believe it. She was telling our neighbour that I was attacking her. When I went through to take the phone off her...
No, don't touch me.
Well, I realised that she wanted me to wrestle the phone away from her.
Get off me. Shirley, he's got me. He's got me.
I was arrested and put in a police cell. The charges were quickly dropped, but while I was there... The sergeant told me something unbelievable. Adelia had claimed, while she was still going out with me, that she was the mother of a baby abandoned at Harrods and she wanted to claim it.
From her husband's point of view, of course, these are completely contradictory behaviours. And it's a classic double-bind situation, which is both approach and avoidance. She's trying to pull him in, at the same time she looks as if she's trying to drive him away. So he will have understood that his wife at this point is not being a sane human being.
By that time, I'd had enough. I filed for divorce.
Abandoned by her husband, Adelia had no intention of remaining on her own. 8 months after their split up, she embarked on her desperate trip to Cardiff and to the fateful encounter with the Harrells and 4-month-old Natalie. May the 2nd, 1988, and 4-month-old Natalie Harrell was in the clutches of Adelia, who had abducted her. Her family and police had no idea of Adelia's identity or what she was to do with her captive.
I always remember at the time that who I now know as the Chief Superintendent of South Wales, John Williams, he came up to me and he said, I give you my word, this person thinks she's clever, but believe me, we get her back.
That evening, Adelia brought Natalie to her home at Newton Le Willows in Lancashire.
Of course, I couldn't sleep that night once I got in, wondering what had happened and what was going to happen. But I basically stayed awake all night.
Police cast their net nationwide.
It was a matter of saying, is this baby still in the Cardiff area? Is it in South Wales? Or is it in the UK?
These were days before widespread CCTV footage was available. Obtaining a good description of Adelia was vital.
Well, did she have, like, starry eyes or long eyelashes like that?
Louise helped police put together a photo fit.
Does she have eyelashes pretty much like that, really?
I can remember looking through books and books of different eyes, different noses, different mouths, chins, hair. And then I had to put the photo fit together from what I could remember.
There was little forensic evidence to go at. Using the photo fit and press briefings to appeal to the public was the central tool of the investigation.
The media were massively important. We understood from the very beginning that they can reach parts that the police can't, and therefore we made a conscious decision to use them as much as possible.
And we give every interview we could give, and we give every story, and we tried our best to keep on the front pages.
The story quickly caught the public imagination, dominating the news.
I think some stories about abduction really take hold of us all, like the Madeleine McCann story, because of the way they grab us, because we empathise with the parents. You know, we've all been in that position. You know, we've all left our children for a few moments or a few minutes. And I think whenever you imagine yourself in that situation, it sets up a psychological bond between you and the victims, and I think you genuinely care about the outcome of the whole thing.
Responses to the coverage began flooding into the incident room, each needed checking out.
We received hundreds of calls, and I don't think there was a police force in the country that wasn't carrying out an inquiry for us. At the outset, this appeared to be something of a maternal nature and not malicious. We therefore appealed and we said that the baby had to be fed every 3 hours and was partially on solid food. I then appealed to everybody, mostly women, who would have empathy with the family, who did somebody come home with a baby they shouldn't have? Was somebody living above them, more active with a child?
Louise and Maggie were left coping not only with a sense of loss, but guilt.
I felt angry with myself. I felt, why was I so stupid?
I'd basically said the most awful thing to her, which I will always regret. I said, you didn't let that woman take our baby. Well, of course, I was in such a state. I said, oh, my God. I said, I'm sorry I've said that. I didn't mean that. That was my first thoughts, accusing, which was totally wrong to a 9-year-old. I was the mother. I was the one in charge of that child. It should have been me.
I should have done more for Natalie, being the responsible one that I always was. My mum would leave me, you know, and say, right, you can feed your sister, you can change your nappy. You know, like I took on the motherly role. I sort of felt responsible that I should have taken better care.
To have allowed that to have happened, I felt a failure. And sometimes when I think back now, I think I was a failure as a mother. But I had to get myself over that.
The police inquiry was massive. We had upwards of 50 to 60 detectives from South Wales working on it, and of course the rest of the country through the media were well aware of what was going on.
But the family could do no more than wait for news.
It's a sense of hopelessness. No matter what we did, we couldn't do much. But the lowest I got was 3 days after Natalie went missing, about 6:10, the phone rang and I answered it.
Hello?
And it was a woman just said that she's dead. Everybody was looking at me expecting good news, and I just broke down, and it's the first time that I cried. I had to go into the kitchen. My mum and dad was there, and I was just in tears, and it was so out of character as well that you just couldn't explain it. And I just couldn't believe anybody could be so hateful.
I can remember that was the first time I ever saw my dad cry, which is a big deal because my dad is the type of man that's sort of, oh no, you're a man, you know, you don't need to cry. But he was really upset. Emotionally, it was a very hard time for my family. All of my family got together, my aunties, my grandfather, everybody was always in the house.
Many in the local community too provided support. Among them, the Reverend Michael Short.
Every morning, they seem full of hope that that day may bring the little girl back. And then, as the evening descended, I would call again, the darkness would come, and they'd have darkness of a different kind, because there'd be no hope, no mention of little Natalie. And they hoped for the best, but feared the worst.
By the end of the week, I was starting to go downhill quite fast. And it was on the Friday that I actually was at my worst.
The feeling of desperation went as far as the press, and they, like myself and so many other people, were very desperate to get this little Natalie back. One newspaper asked me if I would possibly consider going to find out where the little girl was. If somebody would let me know, then I could go and fetch her and bring her back to her parents without divulging the identity of the abductor to the police. And I realised that this was certainly against the law, so that was not done.
The involvement of the media proved double-edged, adding to the pressure. The breakthrough came not from a random member of the public spotting Adelia, but from someone closer to home who heard about the story and put two and two together. It was Adelia's estranged husband who provided the crucial information.
Just kept nagging at me brain. I'd seen the photo of it, I'd heard the story. It all fitted too well with Adelia's fantasies involving babies. I just contacted the police.
Police went to Adelia's address. They had no way of knowing whether this would be just one more fruitless house call, or if she did turn out to be the abductor, what she might have done to baby Natalie. Police looking for snatched baby Natalie Harrell had received a tip-off from the estranged husband of the abductor. 5 days after the kidnap, on May the 6th, they visited her home, one of hundreds of such checks being made across the country.
Do you mind if I pop in a minute? Oh, well, we'll talk about it inside.
This time, they found a baby, but they couldn't be sure it was Natalie.
Is this your baby, madam? Give me the date of birth.
March 23rd.
March 23rd. You're asking me to believe this baby's only 6 weeks old.
Yeah, it's just big for his age.
Yeah, very big.
Under questioning, Adelia admitted the baby was not hers. She said she'd seen a boy shaking a pushchair, and when she told him to stop, he didn't seem bothered.
So I decided that I needed to just take him for his own protection.
Adelia claimed that the only reason she took the baby was because the brother was shaking it violently. So people can justify all kinds of actions through the stories they invent for themselves. This is a really common feature of these cases. These people want to live with themselves afterwards, and they do it by justifying their actions in all kinds of complex and psychologically interesting ways.
Police suspected their search was over, but only the family could give a definite identification.
Hello, I found the local
Obviously, I did. I'm here to tell you that we found
the
baby.
Well, to me, I just felt, that's Natalie. But Maggie, obviously more maternal, she said, well, I've got to pick her up and I've got to see her. Whereas I'm almost screaming from the rooftops, we got Natalie back. And that was the big difference between me and Maggie at the time.
Maggie and Paul were driven to Cardiff Police Station for the journey north.
Can you remember? 20 years ago. Yeah. Gone like that, haven't
it? Yeah, remember like it was yesterday when we arrived at the station here.
A decoy car distracted the press.
We went downstairs and got in a car under the ground somewhere, wasn't
still
it?
Still a blur. Yeah, still a blur, isn't it?
We went in one direction and the car went in the other. And we were travelling
like
in the
Miami
car.
Miami Vice, I said, didn't I?
That's right, yeah. I was still in a bit of a quandary as, you know, what to think, because I thought, well, what if it isn't her? And, you know, I'm going to be so disappointed.
I can remember waking up in the night and my parents weren't there. And I thought it was very odd. And my grandmother was there at the time and she said, go back to sleep now, everything's okay. And I said to her, where's mum and dad gone? Oh, they've gone to speak to the police. They shouldn't be long. There was something, the difference in the house, you know, the spirit of the house had changed. Something had gone on and I knew something was had changed. Nobody would tell me what was going on until I think that they were sure, you know, that it was definite, that it was Natalie.
My husband went forward, took the baby off, and I thought, what on earth are you doing? That's not our baby. I don't know whether my mind was playing tricks or something, but the baby was dressed in blue, and I thought, that's not my baby. I thought, what's he doing? You're thinking, are they taking me on a wild goose chase? How do they know it's Natalie? But thinking back now, I remember they asked me, did she have any distinguishing marks?
She's got a birthmark on it. She's there. A birthmark's there. It's Natalie.
And I realised then that it was Natalie. But that was a strange feeling, very strange feeling.
The next thing I heard was the phone going. And my nan answered the phone and she said, we found her, so it was quite... Sorry. Oh, it's quite emotional. That part of it is because, you know, it's happy emotion because it's one of those things you sort of feel... As a child, you know, that's the best thing that you wanted. You wanted to hear that news. I didn't want, you know, you didn't want to hear the news, but it was sort of bad news. I was hoping that it was happy news, and it was. They'd found her.
We arrived on 5 o'clock in the morning, and when we got to the house, there was a big banner saying, "Welcome home, Natalie."
Reporters, friends, family, everybody. People out in the street, everybody dancing, drinking, partying without us.
My brother and my friends had gone to the local shop for champagne at 2 o'clock in the morning and the shop served them. And they said, don't tell us, we're Natalie's back. And as we was there, all the cars were beeping and tooting. So it was a fantastic time.
Away from the partying and hubbub, the first few quiet moments together for the family.
When I actually held her in my arms, instantly I went straight back into mother role. I was like, oh, I got to soothe her, she's crying. It felt really, oh, it was amazing feeling, the best feeling I've ever had.
Armfuls of flowers arrived from well-wishers.
At one stage, we absolutely filled the bath. There were so many bouquets. I mean, I absolutely love flowers. So what we decided to do, we decided to take quite a lot of them up to the local hospital so that the patients up there, because we'd had too many to keep in the house. But it was nice at the time.
Well, I was elated, and so were all my staff. So were the media, and I think everybody let out massive cheers. It was a wonderful thing, because there was a bonding with the family between the police and everybody else, and it was such a lovely outcome to it.
John Williams will always hold a special place in our hearts, and I felt there was a special bond between us all, and I think that we all worked together as a team to get Natalie back, and that's what we did.
Police, like everybody else, they are family people, and when a child is involved, they do become sometimes emotionally involved. It's probably the best case of my career.
A short time after Natalie was found, she was christened, along with Louise and her brother Kevin, partly in Thanksgiving.
Well, the christening was a great occasion, and they came along to the church, and big numbers came to support them. And it was a very happy day.
For Adelia, the story wasn't over. Police searching her house had found a wig used to disguise herself. Also, news cuttings on the kidnap. There was evidence of a bonfire used to burn the coat she'd worn in Cardiff. Adelia appeared at Cardiff Crown Court and claimed the abduction hadn't been planned. But the court heard she told a policewoman she went to Cardiff to get a baby so that she could keep her husband. Police found she hadn't been pregnant for 15 years. She was jailed for 3 years.
I didn't think the sentence was enough for what she did. I thought she could have got a year for each day that she got had taken her away. I thought at least 5 years. But obviously she only got 3. I was a little bit disappointed.
To find out then, in 18 months' time, that she was going to be coming out on good behaviour was just unbelievable. You think even if she did do the 3 years, it was, it wasn't very long for what she'd put us through.
I think in trying to understand Adelia's state of mind, you're trying to understand the state of mind behind all infant abduction. When you interview abductors, they always say the same kind of things. It's about compensating for loss. It's this absolute pathological desire to have a child, regardless of the consequences. And most also point to the fact that if they just had a child, it would produce some magic solution to a relationship problem.
Whatever Adelia's motives, the family feels scant sympathy.
I don't feel sorry for her in a way, because Natalie wasn't hers. She had no right to take her. I don't think I will ever forgive her for what she did.
She knew exactly what we was going through, because every single newspaper had Natalie on the front page. So even 20 years on, my feelings for her are still not very good. And if I never see her ever again, that'll be soon enough for me. I try not to think about her, because she could have destroyed our life.
I felt like I'd nearly destroyed myself as being a good mother, but I sort of picked myself up from that and thought to myself, you mustn't let this ruin your life, you mustn't let it beat you, you've got to fight this, and you've got to turn it around. It took quite a long time to do that, but I did do it, and we've got a happy ending.
Louise is now 29 with children of her own, aged 5 and 12.
I think now had more of an effect on me rather than going through my childhood. you know, it was one of those things that had an effect now where I won't let my children go out unless I know there was somebody, you know, they're safe. It's sort of, I've lost a lot of trust in humanity. I've lost a lot of trust in people. I think that's what it's done to me.
There's one person she can trust. Natalie, now 21, studying chemistry at university, living at home with her parents.
It could be, you know, totally different life. You know, I may not be doing my degree. It could be working. I could be doing anything. And I wouldn't have, you know, my brother and my sister. I wouldn't have, well, none of my family, would I at all? Yeah, I do think sometimes about it. But, you know, it worked out right in the end, didn't it? And I'm with all my family. I don't really feel hate towards her. It's hard to describe what I feel. It is weird to think that she could be watching this, you know, watching me, but I don't know where she is. I don't know what she looks like, you know. She could be anybody.
I'm very protective of Natalie. Even more so than I ever was. We're always close anyway, you know, as some sisters are. But I think it brings me closer to Natalie because obviously I want to be there most of the time and I just feel, you know, I'm really lucky and glad that she's with us.
Thank you.